This is James Jude Courtney. I'm the new Michael Myers, and you're listening to the Epic Film Guys podcast. Thanks for being here, guys.
And welcome to a very special spotlight presentation here from the Epic Film Guys podcast, part of All the Horror. There are dozens, and I mean dozens, of podcasters all collaborating to talk about horror all month long, 31 episodes. It's going to be absolutely amazing. And we're going to talk about one of a horror masterpiece. Let me just get it out there in front, put all my chips on the table so you know exactly where I'm approaching it from. Murnau's masterpiece, 1922's Nosferatu. We have on the show to help us break down the better parts of this film and to laugh at its many silly moments. We are joined Derek from the Work Life Imbalance Podcast. Derek, welcome to the Epic Film Guys.
Thank you for having me, Nick.
All right, and we are also joined by Jason and Trish from Invasion of the Remake. How the hell are you guys?
Good.
Awesome.
Good, good, good.
Thanks for inviting us.
Yes.
All right, and of course, there's a little audio jingle that is being attached to all of the shows that you'll hear all throughout the month. And follow All the Horror 18 over on Twitter, or you can just check out hashtag All the Horror 18 over on Twitter. And every single day, a new podcast or a new group of podcasts in this group is going to be releasing something else horror themed all month long. This is a collaboration that's like insane in scope and in size, and just hats off to you guys over at Work Life Imbalance for really spearheading all this. It's really, really awesome, and it's great to collaborate with so many amazing people. It really, really is. So my hat is off to you, because this shit has got to be insane, trying to chase all this shit down.
Yeah, it turned out a lot crazier than we thought, because essentially it was just a drunken conversation between Sam from Invasion of the Remake and myself, and you know, he kind of tossed out an interesting idea, and I am terrible at coming up with my own ideas, but like my whole job is essentially executing other people's good ideas. So we just kind of started spitballing, and this is what came out of it. And I think that the entire, you know, WLA Pod Peeps group has done just an immense amount of work and coordination. And it's I'm super proud of what we've accomplished, because, obviously it hasn't necessarily released yet, because this is a couple days before October. But I think it's going to be pretty fucking epic once it's done.
Yeah, we're like overselling it. Like, what if it's a complete and total shit show up until this episode's released? And everybody's like, what are they talking about? There's been no episodes. This whole thing's been a disaster. So many apology tweets.
You are driving my anxiety to 11 right now, Nick. Don't.
Oh, no.
Don't speak that shit into existence, my friend.
So many good content creators in the group that are all working really, really hard. It's really, really great to see so many different people going back and forth and collaborating on everything. It's really, really nice. So thank you very much. Thank you very much for including us as part of it. Mm-hmm. Justin, of course, is not here tonight. He is off to something Halloween related. Even though it's the 29th of September, if there's something horror-related going on, he will sniff it out and he will find it.
Nice.
So, cool. He just had to, do with something else. But that's okay. We got plenty of voices here to talk again about F.W. Murnau's 1922 masterpiece, Nosferatu. Now, we're just going to do this freeform. We're not really going to... I don't feel that there's any use in reviewing a film that's almost 100 years old.
We are quickly approaching the 100-year mark for this fucking movie. And it's nuts to even say that out loud. That is crazy.
It's only 4 years.
Yeah.
Three and a little bit.
It's crazy to watch it, because I think And I was remarking on this earlier because I watched the Blu-ray version of this just before we recorded today. And it's legitimately like stepping into a time warp to go back in time and to see all of the different, you know, the building style, the clothing styles. And I have to talk about this first. The hair. The fucking hair.
Yes.
Jesus Christ, the hair. Man.
Oh. So there are a number, and I mean a number of different characters in this film that have outlandish hair somewhere on their body.
I was so appreciative of it, because the thing is that in the shitty version that I saw that didn't have like the super Blu-ray 1080p quality that you had, hair was like the most identifying factor for people. So like I could actually, you know, without having to see their blurry faces, I could tell who the characters were.
Yeah, they were so just kind of a wonderful blur with a big like tuft.
Big eyebrow tuft. It was great.
Yeah.
I want to go around. Like, I want to know who everybody's favorite hair was in this movie. I gotta know. And, Jason, I'll start with you. I gotta know, man.
Okay, Hutter, Gustav von Wagenheim.
Yep.
That was probably the best pronunciation I've had on my show, let alone anybody else's.
You guys have no idea. Name. This is amazing.
I know. It sounds very legit when I just said that. It's like I practiced it all day. Mm-hmm. His hair is epic. It looks like the mop in my closet.
Oh, man, you need to change your mop. That's gross.
Oh, my God. All right, Trish, what about you?
Crazy. It's a very small moment, but it's just because I noticed there's in the inn when he's getting there going like, give me my meal, I want to go to Orlok's castle. It's the innkeeper's mustache, which is not something I think you can see in nature.
You totally
really weird.
You totally stole my thunder because I adore that mustache.
It's phenomenal. I don't know how you do it.
The scene's lit and it's shot in such a way that his eyes look like they're glowing too, which is really weird. But then that mustache is like legitimately like, does he have to like pull it aside and pin it up to this like his cheeks to eat? Like, I don't even get the logistics of how it works.
Like if he gets too excited and starts talking too fast, does it like flap on the sides? Like just do some fun cartoon accent?
A decent amount of the budget for the movie was spent on aides to hold his mustache for him.
You know, I think if he had some wax, something amazing could have happened.
Oh, my God in heaven. And Derek, what about you?
I'm going to go with Nock, the evil, greedy real estate agent. Because, first of all, it's probably one of the first examples of, like, batshit crazy hair that you see in the movie. And it always just like stuck out to me is like, you know, because it's been a long time since I've seen the movie, so I lost most of the plot points, you know, to time. So when I watched it again, I forgot how like crazy he ends up. And so like I looked at him, I was like, that motherfucker's crazy. And like I was like, that is so telling that like he starts crazy, ends crazy. So yeah, definitely a good character choice for him.
I love how that character is like scaling roofs with that pot belly.
Dude, he's agile.
Has the weirdest body shape of any character in this movie.
Absolutely.
Or in any movie.
I mean, you know, vampires be damned. The least believable thing of this movie is the fact that he climbed a fucking building. Like, that is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, maybe he just has that crazy person strength.
Oh, my.
Have vampire apostate strength.
Yeah.
He talks
about the blood.
This film is public domain. You can watch it for free on YouTube. Be careful about doing that. And Derek, you said that was how you watched the movie today, correct?
Right.
Yeah. So I'll ask Derek about his experience in a moment. But when I first watched the film a couple of weeks ago to kind of prepare for this, someone had just taken a Beethoven concerto, slapped it on the beginning, slapped it on the end, and then the entire, like, other hour of the film in the middle is just the same ambient track. Like, it's like this creepy, like, dark overtones kind of ambient track looped in the background. over and over and over again, there was no care or any concern for synchronizing it with the actual film itself. So you've got like there's a moment like when, I don't know, when he sees that shot, he opens the door in the castle and he sees Orlok standing there by the fireplace, who, we got to talk about how goddamn creepy Max Schreck is in this movie. But
yes,
there's that shot. But then there's like the whole time there's like, weird musical choices. But Derek, you had some interesting music with yours as well, correct?
Yeah, I couldn't tell if it was the original one or not, because I haven't seen anything that was confirmed to be the original. But yeah, the one that I saw, it was on YouTube. I think it's one of the more popular links, I believe. But yeah, it was essentially this kind of like freeform nuts organ music. And, you know, it definitely had like those like dramatic crescendos and things like that. So it may have been the original, but like whatever they pay the organ guy, it was not enough, because he was, like I said, he was grinding the entire time. And I don't think he ever hit the same note twice. Like, he was just up and down those scales going crazy. So yeah, it was definitely atmospheric. But the last time I watched it, because I watched it and then I watched it again to kind of get a refresher, I watched it at 2x speed. So like, it definitely gave me a little bit more appreciation for how wild that music was.
And fun trivia about this movie, which I'll try to drop in here periodically. The original score for this movie is gone. It's like the only thing that exists are like bits and pieces of it, like that people recreate. So most of the time when you get like a new quote unquote official release of this movie, somebody just does a new score to it.
Oh, because wow.
There's so little of the original music left of the film, which I always think is really, really interesting. Because then even when you're listening, if you're listening to like, because I watched the Blu-ray and I love the score on the Blu-ray is incredible. But I have no idea like how similar that is to the original. But it at least it tries to do things like dramatically, like when the cock crows at the end of the movie, there's like a very distinctive sound that it makes. And like the drummer, when he's out in the streets, like announcing the plague deaths and stuff like that, it's actually just a drum roll, things like that. The little skeleton clock in Orlok's castle, there's a little ding and stuff. So you're spend money. I mean, it's public domain. You can get it for free, but spend money on a good version of this film that actually has like a really good score to accompany it, and you will not be disappointed. I promise.
And unlike me, spend a little bit more money, because I picked up my DVD copy at a drugstore and
yeah,
it is 66 minutes. So there's almost 25 minutes missing. And everybody's been renamed to their characters from Dracula.
That's bad.
Which I guess is
it is.
Is a probably a good place to talk about that, because this film is a shameless ripoff of Bram Stoker's Dracula. They couldn't get the rights to do it. But then they just decided, well, just go in there and change like the names and a couple of different aspects of it. It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
That'll spoiler totally keep
changed almost
sued.
Nothing.
Yeah. It wasn't fine. They got sued. The production company got sued by Stoker's estate after the film came out, and they won, bankrupted the production company. This was the only film that company ever made, and they ordered all prints of it destroyed. Luckily for us who love cinema, it had already been distributed around the world. Like, prints of it had already been distributed out, like, across. And of course, this was the 1920s, you know, so you can't just like get on the internet and be like, hey, break that thing or whatever. So
you can't just call a guy.
Yeah. Thankfully, it had already like gotten out there and it had already gotten out there and it survived. And eventually Stoker's estate stopped trying to suppress the film and kind of embraced it. And that's why you see some versions like the one that Jason watched, even though it's way shorter, but it changes the names from Orlok to Dracula, from Hutter to Jonathan Harker, from Ellen to Mina Harker, things like that. But this film almost like could have been lost forever to time, which I think would have been incredibly tragic. Because like I said, I think this film is a masterpiece. I adore this film.
Yeah, and if it got destroyed and we never really knew about it, we wouldn't have such amazing cultural references like in What We Do in the Shadows and fucking SpongeBob. Mm-hmm. What would the world be without
Ashley Slasher?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to actually say that, you know, the name of the villain or whatever from that, but I tried saying it in the car. I was like, I can't say Hashling Slasher. That's gonna
you
be
you just did. You were thinking too hard about it. That's what it was.
Yeah. But
I think this is an example of the first cult film.
Yeah.
To really kind of break out despite a lot of prints being destroyed.
Yeah. It seems kind of exclusive if you saw it or had it. Nobody else would know about it. Like, and that, and people would tell each other about it.
Let's fast forward like 30 years from when it was made. But, you know, shortly after World War II, when things were trying to kind of getting back to normal, and being like, I don't know, like a teen or early adult and finding some way to see this movie. Like, I don't know if that's actually the way it happened, but it seems like that could be how it would go. But that would be rad as shit. Like something that so few people have actually seen, especially at that time when we didn't have any means of disseminating information. That would be insane.
That's one of the things I love about watching this film too, is think about contextually when this film was made. It was made before the Great Depression.
Right.
It was made before the Second World War. Like the First World War had ended a couple years, like what, 1918. So like 4 years before this film came out. That's crazy to think about, like, everything that's happened in our world in the last 100 years. And this film is like so far backward. So that's why, like I said, I love watching it just for that kind of time capsule aspect of it, because you get to see the outfits and the hair, and you get to see especially the building style. I love the buildings that they shoot. Mm-hmm. In this, I don't know where this film was shot. I tried to find some information on it, but unfortunately I did not.
Transylvania, I probably just didn't.
What?
Yeah. A Transylvania, duh.
Well, yeah.
Well, I don't know. It depends. If the movie Shadow of the Vampire is even remotely correct, it would be somewhere in Czechoslovakia.
Right.
I don't even know if that's accurate.
That's one of the best things that ever came out of this movie. That's really, really great to bring that up, because there was that whole theory that Max Schreck is so convincing as a vampire in this film that he had to really be a vampire. And that's the entire basis of that movie.
Well, the thing is that I forget exactly what, but apparently Max Schreck, the guy who played Count Orlok, he was so ugly and vampire-like that in order to do the makeup, all they did was they put like some pointy ears and pointy teeth, and boom, ancient vampire. Like, didn't require much to turn him directly into what they wanted. So yeah, I think there's some credence to him being a vampire.
And it looks spectacular. Oh, like, yeah. The makeup job on him, even if it was minor, looks incredible.
Right.
Yeah.
I love the makeup in this film. It's one of my absolute favorite aspects of it. Like, every time you get a shot of him, especially the further into the film you progress and you really just kind of get that sense of menace that he exudes. Like, think about the shot of him coming up out of the coffin when he's in the ship.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Dude, there's so many shots in this film where he legitimately is one of the creepiest, like, characters I've ever seen in a film, ever. Well, and that's insane.
With the makeup, to me, the makeup is one aspect of it. But to me, what makes it so creepy is just how, like, his movement or lack thereof. Like, he just looks so stiff and unnatural.
Right.
Yeah.
He glides.
In any way he moves. Yeah, he glides, and he seems like, we were discussing this earlier with Jason, like, I don't know if he was, like, corseted maybe underneath that outfit so that it looked like he was that stiff. I don't know. It's very, the way he carries himself is what creeped me out more than anything else. I'm like, that's just unnatural. You're not real.
Yeah, it's very
you're
unnatural.
You're exactly right too, Trish, because a lot of what he does, he doesn't like you think about like modern vampire movies where the vampire is like lunging at people or whatever. And he like literally there's the one shot in the castle when Hutter's like after he cuts his finger on the bread, which we got to talk for a moment in a bit about how the fact Orlok has zero chill.
No chill
whatsoever.
No chill at all.
Whatsoever. But There's that one shot in the castle when he's like, no, you don't have to go to bed right now. And then he just stands there and he just kind of extends his hand toward him a little bit, and Hutter freaks the fuck out
right.
and like immediately falls back into a chair.
Yep.
Like, I mean, it looks a little bit silly, like because of the way it's shot and because of the frame rate and stuff like that. But it's still a really, really effective scene because it's like Trish said, it's the way he moves. Mm-hmm. It's so creepy and unnatural. Can I say, before we move any further, some of my favorite shots of Orlok in this film are when he gets to the town and he's legit just got a coffin tucked under his arm, wandering around at night.
Yes!
I love that.
How strong is he? He's just walking around casually with a coffin.
I love
and nobody's
it so much.
That was so that. Fucking like beautiful. Oh, just
a creepy man purse. Yes! Is what he's got.
Yes! Looked like he was carrying bread home from the market. God. Mm. Oh. When I saw that, I had to pause it because I was laughing so fucking hard at how ridiculous that is. Because the thing is, like, I mean, he had to have had like some servants or something that might have survived the trip over. Why did he have nobody to carry that for him? Like,
he ate everybody on the ship.
He did eat everybody.
He should have saved at least one of them to carry the damn coffin.
That's poor planning. That really is poor planning.
Oh my god.
Well, no, that's just not watching your diet. Like, I mean, just leave a little bit of food for later.
He got hungry on the trip and
like,
finished
you know,
it all.
That's just impulse control. Like, when you're on a diet, you discuss that. Take some of the chips out of the bag. Don't eat the whole bag.
Well, he's
God.
He's an insatiable dude. Because think about, he gets to the town, right? He gets to the town, and after he, and there's that really, really great shot when he carries the coffin and then he just disappears into the door, which right. is great. But like, then all of a sudden, they think it's the plague, but it's really him just attacking everybody. And like, legit, like, there's just a guy walking up the street just marking doors with crosses.
Right.
Like, there's just legit carrying coffin after coffin after coffin down the street of dead people. How many people is he eating tonight?
Like, really? He should not be that thin anymore.
Right?
Where is he putting it?
But like, I want to talk about... he has legitimately no chill whatsoever. There's a scene in the castle where, first of all, whoever in their life has cut bread like that? Ever?
Somebody who's never been cut by a knife before, that's who.
So he cuts himself, and then literally, and it, of course, that's just kind of like Vampires 101, right? Like, they're super chill and cool until all of a sudden they get the scent of blood or they see it or whatever, and then it kind of drives them into a frenzy. But my favorite thing is later on, like the next night, after Orlok wakes back up, the picture of Ellen falls out of Hutter's belongings, and he picks up the picture and he's like, your wife has a
my
lovely
favorite
neck.
That's my favorite line. That was legitimately my best laugh in that whole movie.
Oh my God.
FYI, in Shadow of the Vampire, they replace that with, she has a wonderful bosom.
But at least that's a little bit more abstract. Like, you know, you can say that wasn't like a vampire comment, but like him saying, yeah, she got nice veins and got that good slender neck, good for sucking, like that's clearly vampire speak. Like, no chill whatsoever.
Yeah, that's a warning sign after he finds that pocket-sized book about vampires
exactly.
in his hotel room.
The one that he so carelessly discards on the floor of the B&B. He's like, fuck this thing.
Oh, with contempt.
Yeah.
It's like, this was supposed to be a Bible.
Oh, my God. There's... And of course, we're having a lot of fun with this film, because... contextually, like watching it now, like, of course, we've all seen how many movies, you know, over, well, even just as a collective humanity over the past 100 years, you know, so you watch things in this film, which I'm sure, like, audiences at the time, this was probably like terrifying.
Yeah.
But a lot of this kind of stuff in the movie is just like really funny.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This movie was actually banned in Sweden for 50 years for its horror element,
for being too scary.
Yeah.
What did Max Schreck do to piss off the Swedish government?
Yeah. It wasn't until the 70s that they started seeing this movie, which is crazy.
So there was one
Sweden to be tougher than that.
So there was one thing that I wanted to bring up that was the funniest thing in the entire movie for me. And it was right out of the gate, and it really kind of set the tone for the rest of the movie for me. So so Nock, the real estate agent, gets a note from, or a letter from Count Orlok, and the, apparently Transylvania is right in fucking Wingdings. Like,
yes, it's a, thank you.
It's a cipher.
That drove me nuts.
But it looks like fucking Wingdings. And like that, that's another moment where I had to pause the movie. And that was less like raucous laughter, but just like, whoa,
dude, that's every time I see that part of the film, because there's never any like translation or anything like that for it either. Because obviously he describes it to Hutter.
Right.
But it's just like you're looking at it and you're like, what am I looking at?
Yeah. And he looked at it as like, ah, yeah, this is normal. This is, you know, typical Transylvanian, you know, script. And I was like, God damn. Maybe that's where they got Wingdings from. Who knows?
Maybe. And then like when he takes the documentation back to like Count Orlok, it's the same type of thing.
Right.
It's like, what are you reading, dude? Like, what does this mean to you?
Another thing I wanted to bring up, and we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, but I wanted to bring it up again because I think it's so poignant. Poor Ellen. Mina. She... There are title cards in the film that state this explicitly. All she did was pine over Hutter while he was away. Like, and Trish, you actually mentioned this when we were talking earlier.
Yeah.
Like one of the most absurd scenes in this film to me, and I think to you as well, she's sitting mm-hmm. on a beach surrounded by yes. crosses, just legit, yes. just staring at the water, pining away,
just on
waiting
a windy
for
day.
It to come off.
And like other people have to like come and get her. Like they bring her notes because she's just apparently out there all the time.
And keep in mind, this is weeks, if not months.
Right.
Of her doing this
right.
because he's not flying to Transylvania. He is going no. by boat and he is staying there over a long period of time.
Like alternatively, so, I Jesus. Keep thinking, what's the state of her home now? Like, you know, like if you get really depressed and you don't do dishes for a long time and it's just and there's no laundry hasn't been done. Stuff just is piling up.
It's definitely one of those things that, I mean, you look at it through the lens of today and it's like, you know, we would, you know, definitely, especially nowadays, like 2018, it's like, you can't just have the female character be like, well, the man's gone. So of course she's just going to sit there and crumble to pieces until he comes back.
Right.
Like, yeah. But you know, it's definitely one of those things that's a product of its time that she can't even stay at home. She has to get packed off and shipped over to, I think it's her sister or her brother. I can't remember. Yeah. They're related to one of the two of them.
It's actually his sister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like just, it's Hutter's sister.
Oh yeah, it might just be Hutter's sister. But it's like if she's this distraught when he's gone, what happens when he goes to work for just the day? Right.
I don't know. That's a good question though. Like, what is his day-to-day job that he can just up and take this really, really long journey to Transylvania to sell one house? One house.
Well,
the commission must be unreal.
Yeah, right?
They do show the outside of it. It looks like what would probably be like 5 to 6 houses outside. It's like a big compound. So it would be probably amazing. And I kind of took it as the idea was this one sale could like set him up really good for a long time.
Right.
So that would be the only reason he'd do it.
If only he's willing to give up a little bit of blood. Wink, wink.
Right. Yes.
Nudge, nudge.
Oh, there'd be sweat, tears, and blood.
So I did find out where this was shot. This movie was shot in Wismar and Lübeck, Germany. And those buildings still stand today.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, crazy, right?
That would be, like, Justin loves to go to different locations. He went last year, and he visited, like, the setting for Haddonfield, Illinois, in the Halloween movies, and he visited the Full House because of course he did a bunch of different stuff. That would be what I would visit, though. I would love to see that. That would be amazing to see those locations.
I'd want to see the Three's Company apartment building.
Pretty sure that was a back lot, Trish.
I know. If it existed, I'd like to see it.
I want to see the White
Castle.
I
never got a sense of how that was put together, and it always bothered me.
I want to go to the White Castle from Harold and Kumar, just because I really want some White Castle right now.
Oh.
A little hungry.
Go to Vegas. Had it. It was great.
We don't have White Castle. So
we don't. No, we had to go all the way to Vegas for it.
We've got crystals, which is not the same.
No.
Actually, I think I can, if I was really like desperate to sort of try it, I think you can buy like frozen White Castle burgers at the supermarket, but I don't know why you would ever do that.
Yeah. Because it's not going to have like the texture and... you know, the mustard's going to be all like running into the bread and things like that. So yeah, it's not exactly the same. It's not a good analog. And
I mean, you could just say it would taste like a bag of dicks, like legitimately a bag of dicks that was stored in one of the coffins of dirt that they ship from Transylvania.
Coffins full of goddamn soil.
Yes, that's it. I was about to say, I'm like going the goddamn soil. It just sounds like they were mad at the soil. Really? Goddamn soil.
I don't know why that struck me so much.
Not hollowed ground.
Right.
There were some really, really great shots in this film where, and it never really, I mean, it got used before, but there's two really, really iconic shots of stop motion photography in this film, which one of them is the coffin lid elevating up. Mm-hmm. Onto the final coffin, like when all the coffins are stacked up ready to leave the castle, and then the other one is like the canvas tarp pulling back, and then the thing for the hold opening.
That was so fucking bad. Yes. Oh, I was watching it
to today's eyes. Yes,
sure,
it does. But like back then, it was like moving by itself. Like it was like, you know.
I guess we hadn't really had to have much ingenuity back in the 20s, but like I could have, I mean, and of course this is kind of quarterback directing, but I'm like, you could have done that with some string or something, but man, at least like do like take more shots of it. Like it's only like three shots. Like
yeah, the tarp especially is kind of bad.
Yeah, it's like flip. Okay, we're all the way open. It's like no. You take your time. You roll it a little bit.
But I think there's what I want to talk about now, because we've had
the film was expensive.
That's what I'm sure. About to say. I thought the film would be expensive.
Yeah, film is insanely expensive back then, especially. But what I want to talk about now is I want to talk about like actual like legit like favorite moments that you had in this movie. And I want to start over with Trish, and we'll just kind of go around again. But like absolutely, just like even seeing it 100 years later, you're just like, that's amazing. Like you can't get enough of it.
There's two kind of portions. The first one is, I love that skeleton clock. I'm a huge fan. Want one. The
skeleton clock is legit.
That's a great moment. Loved it. But you know, even now, it doesn't even matter like kind of the quality of it. Every time they had the moment where you just see Orlok's shadow go across someone and have an impact on them as if he's actually touching them. I think those moments are great.
Yeah, you and think that's something Francis Ford Coppola took a lot of that from this movie with his Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't get that out of my mind when I was watching this movie.
It's
absolutely
just, I mean, and of course we're of course on a pier when we're chatting here, but I put up probably the most iconic image from this film is from toward the end of the film when Orlok is headed into Ellen's home, and there's just that shot of him in silhouette, like his silhouette just climbing the stairs. And it's like, to this day, every time I see that shot, I just get like a little tingle down my spine just because it's so beautiful. Like it is literally perfection. Like just looking at it, I can't espouse enough how much I love that shot. And you're exactly right when you mention that, Trish, because then there's like the follow-up shot to that is him like reaching in like as if he's opening the door, but
right.
All we're seeing again is that shadow and that gnarled hand with those long fingers. Like those fingers are so long, just like extending out toward that door to open it. Oh, it's so affecting, and it's so creepy unless you watch this film with a really shitty musical score, and then it's just funny.
That's weird.
Then it's the part when the flutes kick in. So
but when you mention that too, like I mean, it is like, it's how he creates that silhouette with his body, how he just exhibits just the simplest item of like being a silhouette. Like, standing somewhere is creepy, the way he puts it together.
I mean, think about what they had to do to achieve that. So we talked about the makeup before, but when you think especially about the makeup in this film, they gave him a lot of really sharp features because they pop out really, really well in the shadow. You can even see in the image that we have up here, you can very, very clearly see those fingers individualized. You can see that nose, that giant nose that they give him, and even his eyebrows.
Mm-hmm. Right.
His eyebrows are huge. Mm-hmm. And you can very clearly see them in the silhouette, in the shadow. So I love that the makeup kind of works in synchronicity with that. And just, it's so creepy and it's so affecting. I mean, like, probably, especially horror movies all time for me, like, it's probably one of my favorite, like, horror movie shots of all time.
Right.
It's, I think it's, number one, it's just so iconic and it's gorgeous. Like, imagine, and that's why when I talked before about Stoker's estate winning the lawsuit and wanting all the prints of this film just right, imagine never seeing that shot.
Right.
I mean, you wouldn't know because you would never have seen it, but like, I don't want to live in a world where we didn't have that shot. Well, you know, I mean, like, for me,
that's a very valid point, because the thing is that there are a lot of things that we kind of like goof on this movie for, but there are a lot of things that this movie, if they didn't do first, they perfected, but there are some things they did truly first. And they have set the stage for the next 100 years of something to look back on. And even with the goofy parts, like, you can see moments of just brilliance in like this shot. And I know that for the first time, in this movie, like, this was the first time that, you know, vampires were actually like destroyed by the sun. Now, it was a little bit cheesy the way they did it. Like, you know, it wasn't exactly, beautiful execution, but like, it's the first time that it really appeared in film.
Yeah.
And so
that pioneered it right here.
Right. And so there are so many things that if we didn't have this movie, you know, who knows what the landscape of horror movies would look like today.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's fascinating to think about that. And the fact that, like you said, it almost happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the copies of Nosferatu that exist today, like, I mean, obviously you can find it anywhere, even at a drugstore, but all that goes back to the fact that the film was distributed overseas. Like, I'm sure after that website was done, like, they stormed into that production company and destroyed literally every print that they had there. Any theater house in Germany that had that film, destroyed.
Right.
You know? So it's really, really, I love, especially back in this era, because you know, you always read about lost films. Metropolis is another one of my absolute favorite silent films. And when I was in college and I did film studies, I watched a version of Metropolis that was just like, so much of that film had just been lost, like wholesale reels of the film just gone.
Right.
And I still have not caught it. But then, like, I forget when it was. It was not too long ago, like maybe 10 years ago or so. In Argentina, of all places, they found like an almost like a 95% complete print of the film.
Wow. Yep.
That they went back in and they cleaned up all the other stuff, and then they reassembled like a master edition of it. And now the film's like legit 95% complete. There's only like one scene missing now.
Wow.
Which,
yeah, it's a pretty long movie.
Yeah.
So did they find it in a collector's collection, or did they just find it by accident? Like, somebody just had it in a basement.
I can't remember. I'm pretty sure it was like in a collection somewhere. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. It's been a while since I've read about it, but it's insane to think, like, I mean, when I watched that movie, like, you'd watch like 15 minutes of it and then you're reading wholesale for like 5 minutes because it's just title cards explaining what was supposed to happen.
Right. Oh no.
And yeah, it's amazing, but
it's such a beautiful movie.
It is. It's such a masterpiece. If you've never seen it, probably one of the pinnacles of the silent film era as well. But you can see, especially in films like that, influence that comes from this kind of expressionistic stuff that you see in Nosferatu, this amazing use of shadow.
Right.
This amazing use of lighting. Fritz Lang, who did Metropolis, Fritz Lang's M, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, like all these different German films that definitely live in that same kind of vein where it's all about
one of my faves,
the mood and the atmosphere of it. Like, I don't know what you guys think about all that, but it fascinates me.
It is. And like, this is the light and shadow is one thing. But when you talk about how Count Orlok looks and how all the sharpness of it, it seems to me like his character itself is an expression of a lot of that angular German expressionism that sort of came later. Right. Like he was the human embodiment of that, where stuff was just at an unnatural angle. Like when he like bends back and the sun comes through, that doesn't look like a normal person could do that. Like it's really good.
I will say that one thing, and I appreciate all of the beautiful shadow work, but there was one thing that stuck out to me. Towards the end, when Orlok was about to get all up on Ellen, and there was that one shot where he basically copped a feel via shadow. That was so fucking funny in the moment, because it was like it was building up all this tension, and you knew that the climax was about to happen, and essentially all of a sudden here comes this shadow where you think, you know, okay, he's going to be coming close, or he's going to attack her, and all of a sudden, like from our perspective, it just looks like he grabs her tit. Like I was like,
yes. And what makes it even funnier is all up before that. So she's decided that she needs to sacrifice herself, and the only way that she can do that is by inviting him in,
right?
So she opens the window, and legitimately, all she's doing is like grabbing her titty and like shaking it out the window at him. Like she keeps groping her titty. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what's happening right now?
Oh my god! Like she opens the window.
Wait. So that's Mardi Gras. That's not how you seduce someone.
Well, it is.
Clearly, it is, because Trish, it works.
No.
This explains so much.
But they're looking at each other across the street, essentially just through the window, and she opens the window as if to say, you know, my husband's asleep, and immediately he's like starts creeping that way. Like he's coming. Like he is thirsty.
Like Trish mentioned, the way that he moves away from that window, which is one of my favorite shots as well, the shot of him in the window.
Right.
But the way that he moves away from that window, like he's like bending backwards and like it's so creepy.
Right.
But then, like, legit, the whole time, she's just... And then, like, after she, like, opens up the window and invites him in and gropes herself for 5 minutes, then she wakes up Hutter and is like, hey, go get this guy. Like,
right.
To get him out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah, my God. It's man, so her titty weird. Saw some action that night.
Yeah, I don't know.
She texts him, Count Orlok.
Well, we know Hutter.
She's texting Count Orlok. Well, yeah, husband ain't home. Come on over. And he comes.
Well, you know, Hutter'd been in the, you know, he'd been in a hospital. He was a little tired. He was just trying to recover after his trip. She just wasn't getting any. She was like, I thought when you got home, we'd be getting busy because you've been gone a long time.
And I mean, that's what she's been pining for, clearly. Like...
Obviously. And I seen Hutter's pants. Don't know why. Anyway.
Can we talk for a moment? How, like, this must have just been how, like, the costuming or whatever. I don't know. But it cannot have been comfortable to just wholesale have had his whole cock and balls tucked into one pant leg.
Right? Like, it's, that costume is troubling on so many levels.
It really is. Like, I don't even have any other words to say about it.
He must have loved to be in that nightgown just for a little bit, because at least then...
Just so the junk could breathe.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Thank God it was a silent film, because can you imagine his voice?
Oh my God.
After like a long day of filming. Oh.
There's a reason why the guy never made a transition to sound.
Has anybody here, I've never seen it, but has anybody here ever seen the 1979 Werner Herzog remade this film in 1979? Has anybody seen it?
I don't think so.
I've seen scenes, but I've not seen the whole thing.
I have not. Look forward in an upcoming invasion of the remake.
Yes.
Please.
Way down the road. I'll give it way down the road. Well, give this one some space.
I want to just kind of pitch it around the horn here. This has been so much fun. Mostly making fun of this movie, but also I don't think you can't watch it in a 1922 context. Like,
right.
We obviously have 100 years of history that separates us from this movie. So you can't really watch it through that mind's eye anymore, but I think it's important to just at least understand and kind of respect what it was.
Absolutely.
And what it was at the time. So I just want to go around the horn here and just kind of like, if you have any other final thoughts you want to throw in here about the film, and then we'll wrap it up.
Murnau really, he's actually has some really great shots in here. He's got some poor shots too, but it's 1922. They're still kind of experimenting with the technology as a whole, but there's a shot on the ship I really love. It's a worm's eye view, high angle onto Orlok. The failure of the shot is it's clearly shot during the day.
Right.
But proper prints kind of tint it to blue to shift it back to night.
Yeah.
But despite that kind of possible blooper, it's a really nice shot. Right.
Yes.
And that one still stands out to me as probably my favorite shot in the film. And Murnau
was
just still really good about that.
Speaking of that shot, because that shot's when he's stalking the captain of the ship. Can we talk about the captain of the ship's glorious sideburns?
Yes.
Holy
that was
shit.
Another hair moment.
Oh, that was so good. Oh.
The first mate, although his haircut, I needed to explain to me.
I think those sideburns were made from the bartender's mustache after the scene was done.
Probably.
Oh
my god, the hair in this movie is glorious.
Absolutely.
And you know, another thing about that scene is that once again, I mean, I have the most irreverent humor. And, you know, essentially after he killed the captain and was just driving the fucking boat, he looks so proud of himself. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, I'm on a boat, motherfuckers. Let's go. I'm driving this myself.
Well, we talked about earlier the shot of the cargo hold opening, but I love when he pops up out of the cargo hold and the big shit-eating grin he's got on his face.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny.
He's like, I'm going to eat you.
Where are you going to go? You're on a boat.
Well, the other guy jumped off, so I guess that was an option. But, like, didn't it seem like the captain basically, like, tied himself to the... to the steering wheel to be like, I'm going nowhere, yeah. Motherfucker. You're going to have to eat me where I stand. And he did, but you know.
Which he very immediately did, right. Yes.
it was a valiant effort.
It was very kind of him to stay on the plate.
Right? Right? That's dedication to your job.
But I would say probably my favorite scene of the entire movie in a appreciative fashion was essentially when Hutter goes down the stairs to the basement of Orlok's manor and finds him, you know, in the coffin, just kind of, you know, basically takes the cover off the coffin and sees him. And we basically see him like in a horrified way, like back up and then back all the way up the stairs. Like that, yep. That was I mean, of course, like now, like we have some tougher shots where, you know, there's not that relief of the cutaway, but this one was one of the earliest, I mean, obviously one of the earliest ones that would do that, and so you get no relief from cutting away, and so you just see him like horrified backing up the stairs and, you know, just completely unable to handle what he's seen. So it was a very powerful scene. Yeah. Overall,
I love that scene. I love, and speaking of Orlok's manor, I really really love a lot of the exterior shots that are done around there. One of my one of my favorite sequences is after the carriage brings him in and Hutter gets off, he crosses the bridge and then the little title card pops up and it's like, whatever. And then that's the first time we ever see Orlok in the cloak with the horses.
Right.
And it's sped up footage. Yeah. So yep. Like they're skipping across the landscape. It reminds me of like fucking like a Benny Hill skit or something. Right. Like it's like, they almost put that music behind it.
Oh,
it's so funny the way that they make that movement. I mean, they have a shot of Hutter when he's in the carriage where he's like, Like he's being blown away by it. Like it's supposed to simulate fast movement.
Right.
But they apparently just couldn't do it back then. Yeah. So it just looks hilarious.
And that's funny because there's another scene towards the end when they're all chasing Nock, and essentially it's like a 4 or 5 minute like hide and seek Benny Hill skit. Like they're running through the field and they think they found him and they hold it up and it's a scarecrow and they kind of shake it for a minute.
They all take turns beating the shit out of it.
I was like, are we really doing this?
Everybody takes a shot at that scarecrow, literally everybody.
I think in 1922, that was to break the tension.
Right. Oh, God. Oh, that was beautiful. God,
I want to know why Visine hasn't made a commercial of this, some clips of this yet, because Max Schreck only blinks once during the entire movie.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
There is money being left on the table.
Right.
Everything else about this film, I think... You strip every other element of it away. And like I said, we've had a lot of fun with it. We've talked about a lot of the iconic aspects of it. But I think it all centers back on Max Schreck.
Right.
I think you strip everything else away from this film. His performance as Orlok in this film is spellbinding. He's creepy. He's effective.
Mm-hmm.
The way his eyes, it's you're right. He doesn't blink. His eyes are always so wide. And mm-hmm. just like that giant beak of a nose that they gave him, the ears, those massive bushy eyebrows, which are, you know, second only to Nock's eyebrows. But you strip everything else about this film away, and it comes down to Schreck's performance. Schreck's performance is what makes this film as masterful as it is.
Right.
Bar none. Clearly dedicated to his role, like mm-hmm. you don't see him break at all in this movie. Like this movie wouldn't be half as memorable without that performance.
Absolutely.
You couldn't do this movie without that performance.
Right.
It would come off as too comical. It wouldn't work. It wouldn't be terrifying at all.
Yeah, especially nowadays it would definitely come off way too comical, because I mean, like, not like, first of all, who works for a motherfucker that looks like Nock? Who? If you want to move to this town, you got to talk to him to buy a house. I'm not buying a house there.
No.
He's got no teeth, or like they're sawed off or some shit. He's bald, but he also has these giant, crazy tufts of hair.
Right.
And his eyebrows look like they're tentacles. They're going to leap off of his face and grab you.
And I'm sure the lease looks like demonic wingdings.
Yes. Can you imagine somebody giving that to you as the lease, and you're like, what the fuck is this? This doesn't tell me anything.
It says right there in section 3, subsection 5, *, comet, doghouse, star. My God in heaven.
Well, I thought that should be *, fire truck, dog, comma, star.
God damn it.
That's some good negotiating.
Yep.
The fire truck on my lease looked a little bit like just a sedan, though. It wasn't long enough.
See, that's
all handwritten.
That's how they get you.
You need to fight for the fire truck, man.
Somebody wasn't following the right template.
Yeah. That's how they get you, though. You got to give it to your lawyer. Let him read the wingdings before you sign it.
God, this has been a fun discussion. Please, I can't say it enough. All this month, it's only the 8th of the month when this is being released. All month long, search the hashtag, go follow on Twitter, AllTheHorror18, and check out all of the amazing episodes. All, like, literally anything and everything horror. An amazing, and I mean amazing, group of podcasters has just come together to create this just massive undertaking. And I like I said earlier, Derek, my hat is definitely off to you guys at Work Life and Balance for shepherding this whole thing. So what I want to do is I want to go around the horn right now, and I'll start with you guys, Jason and Trish. Tell our listeners where we can find Invasion of the Remake on the web.
We are everywhere. You can find us at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com. We are on all the podcast providers. Just check them out. And if you have an iPhone, just ask Siri to subscribe you to in the Invasion of the Remake podcast.
Yes, you would have to be hiding from us to not find us.
And a good question, I guess I probably should have led off with this, but tell our listeners just briefly what you guys do on Invasion of the Remake.
Well, we kind of take Hollywood to task. Mm. We compare the original movies to their remakes, and oftentimes Hollywood makes movies of remakes of movies we already love, and inevitably they're kind of poor carbon copies. And we, in our minds, we think they should be taking some older movies that may have not found their audience the first time, but had that nugget of a good idea. Yeah. Those are the things you can recreate and make more successful.
Like there's these.
So we'll alternate between those two.
Yeah, they're making the poor choices. It seems like they're making choices of movies that are already good, thinking that they'll make them more right. money, when obviously an original idea, remaking that, probably a better idea. You know, people probably wouldn't know the original.
It really makes me wish there was like a ton of money, box office wise, in remaking really shitty movies. Because my God, there is a plethora of movies that, you know what? No, this one deserves another shot. Somebody else should definitely give this one another go.
Oh, we know. We know this.
We've done 160 episodes now. There's no money in it. No.
It's so sad. It's so sad that there's not. It really is. Because you're right. Instead, you get like 99 times out of 100, you'll get a remake that is just a hollow shell of what the original film was. So,
and if the original already sucked, then you're in bad shape.
Well, I really, really do appreciate you guys being here for all the horror. And Derek, tell us, first of all, tell our listeners about the Work Life and Balance podcast and where we can find you on the web.
Myself, Derek Lewis, and my co-host Frank Eastman, we host the Work Life and Balance podcast. It is essentially an office and work life humor podcast, kind of a faux advice podcast where we take listener questions and issues from the internet, and we talk about things that that occur to most office drones. So it's a little bit niche. Not everybody can relate, but we're speaking for the audience that hasn't been spoken for. And they say talk about what you know, and there's literally nothing I know more about than being an office drone. So yeah, you can find us on Twitter at WLNBalance. You can find us on iTunes under Work Life and Balance or bit.ly/WLIcast. We're on Stitcher, Spotify, everything. Facebook.com/WLIcast. Pretty much anywhere that you can find podcasts, just look for Work Life and Balance podcast.
And you guys both do a wonderful, wonderful shows. So I really, really do appreciate you guys lending your time. Of course, it's all about all the horror, right? It's all about this amazing collaboration, which has just been really, really great. I can't say it enough. Go over and follow All the Horror on Twitter, All the Horror 18, and check out all the amazing episodes. This has been a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
A lot of fun.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thanks so for much, having Nick. Us.
Yeah. And absolutely, I my recommend... pleasure. And of course, Justin, we miss you. Mm. Loisos, we miss you too.
That's a lot of cum.
Yep, exactly.
Wait, where's the lemon meringue?
Speaking of a lot of cum, Loisos is out. He was out at the Hollywood premiere of Best Friends last night.
Ooh.
Got to be our in photos host. With Tommy Wiseau.
I'm so happy I have you as my best friend.
That guy. Greg Sestero and the like, which, man, I'm so jealous.
Oh, man.
I fucking hate you, Loisan.
A couple days ago, I saw Tommy Wiseau doing the Joker scene in the interrogation room.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen that? Yeah.
Yes, that's it. It's like, you have nothing to hurt me. It's beautiful. Nothing with all.
You know
what
my favorite part of that whole bit is?
What?
My favorite part of that whole bit is Sestero's Batman. Because he talks in Greg Sestero's voice, which is way, way, like, he doesn't even try to put, like, an effect on it or anything to be Batman. He's like, why do you want to kill me? What the fuck, man? It's so fucking funny.
We are they?
Like, Tommy isn't even the funniest part of it. It's Sestero's Batman. Oh. Every time Sestero's Batman says something, or he says, like, where's Dent? Like, what
the fuck? Oh my God. Just had a realization. Here's the remake for Nosferatu. You have Tommy Wiseau as Orlok.
Oh no!
And you have Greg Sestero.
They wouldn't even have to
Hunter.
Do any makeup. Oh.
That's the dream.
Just put two toothpicks in his mouth.
Tommy Wiseau already looks unnatural. This could totally work for him.
Your wife has a great neck.
Oh my god. He'd be like in the window, like in the shot of the window across the river from Ellen. He'd be like, I'm going to suck you. I'm going to suck you.
You're tearing me apart, Ellen. Wrong movie. Wrong movie.
Oh my god.
You must be kidding, aren't you?
No, we're not. Make it happen. Please, for the love of God. Now I want to see that movie.
Yes.
Holy shit. Who would Sestero play?
We are good at our job here at Invasion. Sestero would play Hutter.
Yeah, I guess Sestero would have to play Hutter.
Yeah.
I was going to say, can we get the kid that played Denny in the room to play Knock?
Yes.
You're not
that
my fucking
That was
mother.
My choice.
Oh, my God. Oh, now I really just want a fantasy cast like Nosferatu, but with the cast of The Room.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, holy shit.
It would totally work.
Oh my god.
The professor would be the neighbor that Lisa's having an affair with.
Why has no one made this movie yet? Yeah, like you've got the sister and brother-in-law characters. That could be the neighbors that randomly wander into Tommy's apartment and she just starts blowing him on the couch. Like
yes. Oh, and the locket doesn't have Ellen in it. It's just a picture of a spoon.
Oh my god, I need
what a
this
lovely
movie
spoon.
Oh my god.
We are
ladies,
good at our job here at Invasion of the
Ladies and gentlemen. We really, really hope that you had a good time checking out this extended spotlight of Nosferatu. Again, 1922 horror masterpiece and soon to be the smash comedy sensation of all time, starring Tommy Wiseau and Greg Sestero.
But it must be released in 2022, exactly 100 years
later. Oh my,
later.
Received yes.
Orlok with such luxurious head.
How much could the rights to this... I mean, it's public domain in the U.S., so...
Yeah.
We've got 4 years.
Here we go.
Let's get it done.
Oh, I'm gonna. Right. Voice Sauce is still out in L.A. I'm going to be like, hey, can you just kind of plant a little bug in Tommy's ear and be like, Nosferatu.
Right. Let's put this on Kickstarter.
Oh my god. That's perfect. Nosferatu.
Oh my god. But yeah, ladies and gentlemen, of course, if you're just listening to this as part of all the horror, thank you very, very much for listening. I really, really appreciate it. Check out our show, epicfilmguys.com. Every podcatcher under the sun, just search for us. I promise you will find us, and hopefully you will enjoy the show. Coming up on our next episode in all the horror, which is going to be on the 22nd, we'll be joined by the girls from Two Girls on a Bench to talk about The Exorcist, which I still haven't seen. I still have not seen it.
What?
For that thing. Yeah, so that's going to be really, really
you're
nice
in for
me.
A
I can't
treat.
Wait. As soon as Justin that's found out I'd never seen it, he was adamant that I had to watch it. He was like, nope, that's the movie. Cannot wait to talk about that. But ladies and gentlemen, thank you all so, so very much for listening. For myself, for Derek, Jason, and Trish, you guys are wonderful. Thank you all so, so very much for being here. And we will see you at the movies.
Mine had a big pop when he woke up and, like, unbuttoned his shirt to wash.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, okie dokie.
That's one of my favorite scenes in the movie because he extremely dramatically, he opens the vampire book and he reads the same page he read the night before. And then he just throws it really dramatically onto the floor.
Like, oh my god. Yeah. That was so hilarious. He's such a shitty guest at the B&B. Like, goddamn. Just like takes that Gideon Vampire Bible and just starts chucking it around the room, tearing sheets and stuff. Man.
Right?
He is not getting his deposit back.
What's wrong with the Germans if they have vampire books in their rooms instead of Gideon Bibles?
Instead of Gideon Bibles. I was like, Jesus.
About the right size.
They kept giving people the Bibles, but they weren't heeding their warnings, so
like,
they had to put
so many
in
vampires
there.
With the warning books pocket size.
Mm-hmm. It was getting too expensive. The budget didn't have a full-size Bible in it.
It's just the little book of vampires.
I mean, if they eliminate all those extra letters they keep adding to all the words, they would have been able to take a lot less time to write it.
Oh. Oh, we have to speak. Okay, some of the artistry of the writing in the movie is great. But there's a few times where I had to reread it because I'm like, that's not the right word because I couldn't figure out what it was meant to say.
Right.
Because I always do a special one every year because it's horror and Justin, you know, literally masturbates for the entire month of October. So.
Well,
that's a lot
for
of
October,
cum.
Damn it,
we do
sauce.
A lot of October, but I mean, do you do if you're doing the 31 days like we are, do you not like get like real sore from the masturbation halfway through?
I mean, Justin, I said this, I don't know when it was, like a few weeks ago on the show, but Justin's horror boner starts popping up around the end of August and doesn't go away until Christmas. It, like, literally, like he just
okay
all the
that
time.
Sounds about right.
Well, they do say, but they say if you have an erection lasting more than 4 hours, you should call a doctor.
Well, he just puts it in a pie instead. Oh my god!
All right.
What flavor?
This was cherry a pie. This was a wonderful revelation because we just were on the countdown to do top 10 raunchy teen comedies, and both of our number ones, both shows, was American Pie, and Justin decided to take the opportunity at the time to tell us that he once fucked a pie.
Oh wow!
Yeah. I could not breathe. I was laughing so fucking hard.
What kind of pie?
It was an apple pie.
All right.
I not just, fresh out of the oven. Uh
oh. Oh yeah.
So did he just like see it in the movie and was just curious about the logistics or yep. like okay. All right.
Exactly that.
Monkey see, monkey do.
Huh. See, of all the pie types, I don't think apple would be your go-to.
No.
It'd be
not
weird. Your dick would be hitting chunks of stuff. It'd be... Hmm.
Right? If you're hitting that in a woman, she's got some problems up there.
It could just be the IUD.
Have you been to the doctor
IUDs
lately?
Do not feel like that, and they're supposed to be much farther up. If you're getting poked by that, it's not in the right place. You should be very concerned.
When it's that shallow, it's just a chastity device. Just trying to block
yeah,
anything coming
much
in.
It's just poking it. Get out. Get out. Get out. That's the IUD. Just.
So what is the most fuckable pie? I mean, that seems like a question worth answering, to be
what
honest.
The hell? Who wants to? What?
Lemon meringue?
Oh, that's a good one. Because you have multiple textures in there. So you have not a whole lot of resistance going in. But once you're in, you...
I don't...
Yeah,
we have the meringue. Are we supposed to be joined by someone else for this? Outside, and then you've got the meringue inside for when, like, you're in there.
I agree with that 100%. Well, fuck! I didn't think we'd get it in one. Damn.
How is Trish the one that comes up with the ultimate pie to fuck?
Just... Because I own the equipment.
There's your outtake.
Holy shit.
If you ever heard a bear, what can sit in for boobs? I'm here too.
Oh my god.
That is glorious.
So what's this about Nosferatu?
Yes. We seem to have gotten off track.
We're talking about vampires, right? Oh.
All right.
In Nosferatu, Ellen is the pie, and Count Orlok is Justin.
Possibly, yes.
Sorry, I have to differentiate because you guys saw the 66-minute long version where they changed the names of the characters back.
Yeah, I saw the full one.
Yeah.
Like an hour 30.
So, in mine, it's Mina.
Yeah.
I should open up my iPad so I could just keep track of
Yeah, no, mine's Ellen and it's Hutter.
Orlok's the only one. I think Hutter. Is it Hutter?
Yeah, Hutter is... Hutter.
The Harker character?
Jonathan Harker, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Basically and, the three.
Ellen is Mina Harker.
Mm-hmm.
And then Orlok is obviously Count Dracula.
Yeah.
And there's like a small side story with like this professor who's the doctor...
Helsing, but when I did my reading, there is no Van.
Yeah, there is no Van Helsing in the movie, so that's weird.
Yeah.
Yep.
They were like, "Well, he's a character in Dracula. We got to throw him in here somewhere."
Yeah.
That's a name people recognize. Just slap it on your name.
Right?
You Photoshop.
I was kind of wondering why Van Helsing wasn't doing anything.
Just on the sidelines saying, that's some shit."
Yeah. Well, he was still running the mental asylum, but showing people plants that eat the Venus flytrap. Did you
like
see that?
Like a vampire, no. Wink, wink, wink. All right.
That was in mine. I like that.
Yeah.
Let me roll this in proper here. And we'll get going.
All right.
We are live.
Do you want to sync up?
Mm-hmm.
We already did.
Oh, all right.
That's what the check 1, 2, 3 was? Stuff was.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll use that. That's my footprint because I was holding my headphones up to my microphone.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, we did the snap the last time.
No, I don't do the snap or the clap because it takes like 20 minutes because somebody always fucks it up every time. It gets exponentially worse the more people you add on the mic, too. Like,
right.
You start adding, like, we tried to do it once. I think we had, like, 7 people on the show. It took us legit, like, 20 minutes. Not even kidding.
Wow.
Now, is it on 1 or is it on 5? Is it 1 then go? Is it, like,
and it's always, like, one person whose internet is delayed or something else that comes in, like, 3 seconds early or is 3 seconds late. It's like everybody else is on time, and then it's, like, 3 seconds later.
You've already had a full conversation about
that. Yeah, it's like, yeah, no, that's what I use those footprints for that.
Yeah, good trick.
All right, we are live in 5, 4, 3, 2. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very, very special spotlight presentation here on the Epic Film Guys podcast as part of All the Horror 2018. There are dozens of us. All I can think of when I say dozens of us is never nudes. There are dozens of us. Dozens. There are 3 members of German Parliament. Neifig Stolten nude. Fuck you, Tobias. All right. I'm going to take that again. Hang on. Live in 5, 4, 3, 2. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very, very special Hello, everyone. Give me those delicious words. I'm going to...
Someone needs some pie.
Now we know what kind.
We're joined by Derek from the work...
Man. Don't worry. I can't say it either. That's fine.